So in this talk, I'm going to explore the so-called division of labor between grammar and the lexicon. I'm going to focus on a case study that I'm currently working on with colleagues, which I think provides evidence or strongly suggests that we need a sort of a middle ground between lexicalist approaches and what have become to be known as neoconstructionism or neoconstructionist approaches, which is an umbrella term for syntactic approaches, exoskeletal approaches by Borer, and also neoconstructionist approaches in general. So this is to be taken as a general term to cover all these approaches. So a little bit of introduction. So a prominent question in generativist mainstream linguistics relates to how the semantic content of lexical items interacts with the syntactic structures that the lexical items occur in. So this question has piqued a lot of interest, and I think because mostly because of Chomsky's proposal in the early, at least in the early 80s, but going back to the 50s and 60s, that regarding the role that the lexicon plays in the building of linguistic structure. That is that although it is a common assumption that the lexical items of the syntactic structures, they are indeed provided with semantic content, they have some sort of semantic content. Currently, in the theoretical linguistics field, there is no, like, linguists do not agree whether this semantic content either comes from the lexicon or instead the semantic content is provided actually by the syntactic structure that lexical items occur in. So in this respect, what are generally known as lexicalist approaches, and here I just mentioned the work by Jackendoff in the 80s, but also by Pinker. And the work that is going to have an importance, relevance for today is going to be the work by Levine and Rapoport-Huave, or Rapoport-Huave and Levine, starting out in the 80s, but continuing up to date. That it all these can be said to be lexicalist or projectionist, if you want. Here we're going to call them lexicalist approaches because they hold that the semantic content of lexical items somehow constrains or determines the syntactic structure. That is, in this case, the lexical information is taken to be prior to syntax. It comes before to syntax in the lexicon. The lexicon thus holds a privileged status under a lexicalist approach because it's the component that the generative component that governs word formation. So a consequence of lexicalist approaches is that the lexical information that lexical items carry is said to be projected from the lexicon into the syntactic structure and therefore determines the type of syntactic structure. So in a nutshell, we can say that lexical items carry semantic content prior to syntax, which is taken to determine the syntactic structures that lexical items can be associated with. That's the basic idea on a lexicalist approach. In contrast, what came to be known as neoconstructionist approaches especially after Chomsky's minimalist program in the 90s, again, which is an umbrella term for approaches like Hela and Marantz, known as distributed morphology, but also the work by Hartley, Marantz again, and colleagues, and Borer's framework. Although they have differences between all these proposals, they can all be they all fall under this neoconstructionism or neoconstructivist view of the grammar, which they propose that that in contrast to lexicalism, they propose that syntactic structure is not determined by the semantic content of lexical items. On this view, the semantic interpretation of lexical items is derived from the syntactic structure the lexical items occur in. So we see that there's a it's the opposite view of the grammar and the lexicon. So under a neoconstructionist approach, syntax is taken to be the only engine that derives linguistic structure, that is syntactic structure and also morphological structure. So in contrast to lexicalist approaches, structural meaning is provided by the syntax. As there is under this view, there is no need to posit an additional generative engine such as the lexicon to derive word formation. So in this view, syntax is the sole engine that derives linguistic structure. So the idea is that the syntactic structure is semantically rich, and lexical items get one interpretation or another depending on where you associate with a syntactic structure. So in this talk, I'm going to explore the validity of the theoretical postulates as we have just described. In particular, as I mentioned in the introduction, I'm going to focus on a specific case study, but I think it provided evidence that calls for a middle ground between neoconstructionism and lexicalism. Here for this talk, we're going to focus on verbs, on verbal classes. So the evidence that I provide shows that verbal classes appear to be more elastic regarding the types of syntactic structures that they can be associated with. And this goes against, or this shows a contrast with what lexicalist approaches have been arguing for, because they have proposed, as we will discuss, that verbal classes are indeed a constraint regarding the syntactic structures they can be associated with. However, I still show that although verbs are shown to be more elastic, we still have some clear incompatibilities between certain lexical items, between certain verbal classes and syntactic structures. And in that, semantic content does indeed impose clear restrictions on the syntactic structures verbal roots can be associated with. That is, and this would go against the neoconstructionist idea, which is that lexical items in principle can be associated with any syntactic structure because the semantic content comes from the structure. So the main goal of this talk is going to be to try to reconcile and make clear the roles that syntax and the lexicon play in the building of linguistic structure. So the roadmap for today in section two, which is the next one, I'm going to provide a detailed overview of what probably is the most influential lexicalist approach regarding verbal classes, which is that of developed by Levin and Bravo-Hoav. In section three, I'm going to discuss a radical approach within neoconstructionism, which proposes that lexical items are never constrained regarding the types of syntactic structures that they can be associated with. And in section four, after discussing and providing this overview, discussing data that challenge, I'm going to provide data with it, which I think proves challenging for both approaches, challenges both lexicalism and neoconstructionism. I discuss how such data actually call the need for a middle ground between lexicalism and neoconstructionism. So the idea is that we need some sort of balance between the role that the lexicon and the syntax play in the building up of syntactic structure. So a little bit of further discussion within lexicalism. Sorry. So within lexicalist approaches, as I've said, we're going to focus on the work by Rapoport-Hoav and Levin because it's probably the most influential approach regarding argument structure and verb classes within lexicalism. So they propose that the lexicalization of a manner or result component determines syntactic structure. Okay, so what does it mean? So Rapoport-Hoav have proposed that verbs can fall into two main wide semantic classes, what they call manner verbs, as we see in 1a, and manner verbs then are called manner verbs because they encode a manner of carrying out an action. And then we would have result verbs in 1b, which they encode a result state, that is a change of state or location. So the idea is the verbs in 1a, manner verbs, so wipe, run, poison, scrub, sweep, these are manner verbs because they, when you say John wiped the table, here they lexicalize a manner of carrying out an action without providing the result state. That is, you can say John wiped the table, but the table is not any cleaner than before. The table is still full of crumbs, okay? So they lexicalize manner, but not result. And the opposite is in result verbs. So if we take a look at the 1b, clean, arrive, kill, clear, remove. So if you take arrive, John arrived in Barcelona, this entails that John now is in Barcelona, there has been some result state, that is some change of location. But when you say John arrived in Barcelona, arrive does not lexicalize any manner of action. So the verb arrive is silent about whether John has ran, taken a plane or swam or whatever. It's the verb is silent. So we see the opposite pattern. So what's important for the present purpose is that Rapoport-Hoav and Levin have proposed that the lexicalization of a manner or result component by the verb has grammatical consequences for syntax because it is argued to determine the types of syntactic structures that verbs can be associated with. So this is an idea that was proposed at least in the 90s, but as you can see here, the references that I provide, it's an idea that is actually up to date and it's actually been still defended by their work in different times. So for instance, we can see considered examples in 2 and 5. So canonical manner verbs such as sweep in 2 and scrub in 3, they permit object deletion, whereas canonical result verbs like break and dim do not. So take a look at 2. So 2, we have the manner verb sweep, John swept the floor. This would be the transitive sentence. And then you can say all last night John swept, Or you can use the verb sweep in this out construction in English. So Cinderella outswept her stepsisters, meaning that Cinderella did more of a sweeping action than her stepsisters. So we can see here that the object, the actual object, is drop, right? And the same pattern we see in three with a verb like scrub, which is also a manner verb. But then if we try to do that according to them with a resolve verb like break in four, it doesn't work. So you can say John broke the vase, fine, but if you try to meet the object, and then you get what they call an ungrammatical sentence. So all last night John broke, this had to be ungrammatical. And then similarly, you cannot have a resolve verb in this out perfect section construction, because this construction involves the deletion of the actual subject. So Kim out broke the other vase measure is apparently bad. And the same idea is reflected in five with another resolve verb like dim. So John dimmed the lights, fight. All last night jump dim, bad. Our stagehand out dim, your stagehand, bad. So in addition, we can see further different grammatical properties. So as we see in 6 and 7, canonical resolvers appear to disallow so-called non-selected objects, whereas non-selected objects are permitted by manner verbs. So what by unselected object, I mean the objects that we see in 6 and 7. So consider 6a. So in English, when you say, Kim scrubbed her fingers raw. Her fingers is an unselected object. That is, it's not a true object of the verb, because here what's being scrubbed is not her fingers, but rather you scrub a surface, and as a result, your fingers become raw, right? It's not a true object of the scrubbing. The same with 6b. So the joggers ran the pavement thin. Here you're not running anything. You're running, and as a consequence, the pavement ends up being thin. And the same with 6C, this beautiful example, like the child rubbed the tiredness out of his eyes. You are not rubbing the tiredness. You cannot rub the tiredness. You're rubbing your face maybe. And as a result, you remove this tiredness. So this is fine because these are manner verbs, but then you try to do that the same with resolve verbs as in 7 and the Rapport Hoav, and also because in Gus Garbonen, students of Levin, They know that this is not possible in English. So an example like 7a, the toddler broke his hands bloody. This cannot mean that the toddler broke things, and as a result, his hands became bloody. Or the same with Kim in 7b, Kim dimmed her eyes sore. That is, this cannot mean that Kim dimmed the lights, and as a result, her eyes became sore. Okay. So this has been given a formalization, like in regarding the syntax and semantics of the verb. We're not going to focus on why this is exactly the case, but because what's interesting for the present purpose is that the logic behind this in general terms is that in non-selected object constructions, what we see is that the verb is a modifier of the event because it provides a manner of action with which a result set is brought about. So consider 7, 6a again. So Kim scrubbed her fingers raw. This means that the scrubbing, the action that scrub codes, caused the result state of something becoming raw. So here the verbs are interpreted as event modifiers. They provide the manner of action. So only manner verbs are expected to occur in these constructions because they lexicalize a manner of action, right? So if you're a verb and you lexicalize a manner of action, then you are expected to appear in these types of constructions. But yes, so this is what I just said. So for instance, the example 6a can be paraphrased as Kim caused her fingers to become raw by scrubbing. Since resolve verbs lexicalize a result state, but not a manner of action, resolve verbs are then predicted not to permit non-selected objects because what they lexicalize is a result state, not a manner of action. And therefore, you do not expect them to appear in syntactic structures in which they are interpreted as providing the manner of the event. So under this view, we see that the semantic content of verbs determines highly constrained the syntactic structure. So neo-construction is approaches, and here we're gonna focus on a specific type of approach within these approaches because they propose what I call this radical view of the approach. And a very influential approach within neoconstructionism, which is obviously at odds with lexicalism, holds that lexical items, in contrast, do not have any semantic content that is grammatically relevant. So Rapport Hoav has recently called these approaches free distribution approaches, And they are significantly represented by works by Arat, Borer, Acquaviva, also hardly in some of their works, and prominently by Mateo and colleagues, especially Mateo and Acedo Matellán, or Acedo Matellán and Mateo, and recently by Dunbar and Wellwood, and also once again by Acedo Matellán. So we would call these free distribution approaches a radical approach, taking the idea of neoconstructionism to the extreme. So on this view, as we briefly mentioned before, lexical items such as verbs are not constrained in terms of the syntactic context. They can occur because in principle, any verb can appear in a syntactic context. So this line of approaches strongly argues in favor of a verb, of verb meaning, in which the syntactic and semantic properties of the verbs or lexical items in general are exclusively determined by the syntactic structure. The overall picture then is that the same lexical item, a verb in the present tense, can be associated with distinct semantic interpretations as well as distinct syntactic properties depending on the syntactic structure that the verb occurs in. So let's consider an example. So for instance, on this view that the same verb whistle in English can appear in a variety of distinct syntactic contexts is unsurprising and is nicely accounted for, because the verbs are predicted to have this verbal elasticity in contrast to lexicalized approaches, such as living in rubber or what. So an example like aid, we see that whistle is really, the verb whistle in English is really elastic regarding the types of syntactic context that it can appear. So it can appear in an intransitive one, so came whistled. You can have this sort of connative or intransitive one again with the prepositional phrase, come. You can whistle at the dog. You can have the creation reading or transitive reading, whistle a tune, whistle a warning. You can have the ditransitive, whistle me a warning. You can also have this creation reading, Queen whistle her appreciation, meaning that Kim express her appreciation by whistling. And you can have these unaccusative ones like the bullet whistle through the air, or the air whistle with bullets, these locative location readings, katum and that types of readings. So we see that, this is unsurprising under a neo-constructionist approach, because this is nicely accounted for. Namely, whistle is in principle not restricted in terms of the syntactic structures they can appear in. And then you expect to lexical item to show this elasticity, because the syntactic properties and the semantic interpretations of whistle is going to depend on where you put this lexical item. So similarly, the fact that the lexical item siren in English, so it can either be at least a noun and a verb, is also accounted for nicely, because the interpretation of siren as a noun or a verb is derived when this lexical item is integrated into a nominal or verbal syntactic structure, right? So siren is going to be a noun when you integrate it into a nominal structure. It's going to have nominal properties. And siren, in contrast, is going to be a verb when you insert it into a syntactic structure which has verbal properties. We have some examples in 9. So 9, nine illustrates is that the siren as a verb has different uses, as we saw with whistle. So this is also accounted for, and this is something that you would expect under a neoconstructionist approach, because this follows from the fact that siren can be associated with distinct verbal structures. That is, as a lexical item, it shows a lot of elasticity. You can have it in intransitive, transitive, causative, etc. So if we consider some examples in 9, so you can say in English, the factory horn siren throughout the raid. You can have 9B, the factory horn siren midday, and everybody broke for lunch, meaning that the factory horns expressed that it was midday by sirening. That would be a possible paraphrase. You can have this sort of ditransitive. So the police car siren the Porsche to a stop, etc. So this elasticity is something that you expect under a neoconstructionist approach, and there is no need to provide linking rules or sort of trying to. So under a lexicalized approach, this can also be captured, but you have to come up with more machinery to account for that. But under a neoconstructionist approach, this is easily and easily captured. Okay, so what Borer, for instance, consider what Borer, which I would call is the most radical approach. So Borer actually in one of her latest book argues that lexical items are simply phonological indices without any content, because content is only introduced when lexical items appear together with some specific grammatical context. So that this would be the most radical approach. That is, lexical items are simply phonological indices. You only have a semantic interpretation once you use that lexical item in a context. Another line of research within neoconstructionism, which is prominently represented by Aceo Matillán and colleagues and Mateo, but it's also argued and proposed in previous work of Borer and also Aceo Matillán and Mateo Aceo Matillán 2012, they assume that lexical item can have this idiosyncratic content, conceptual content. So they assume that roots can have these verbs, can have this semantic content before syntax. But what's crucial here is that it is not taken to be grammatically relevant. That is, although they can have this conceptual content does not have an impact on the syntactic structures that lexical items can be associated with. So what we arrive at a picture of the grammar in which lexical items under these approaches are predicted to appear in any context. And cases of a pattern on grammaticalities are, under these approaches, they are argued to be simple incompatibilities between the semantics introduced by the syntactic structures and the idiosyncratic content of the lexical items. That is, what at first sight appears to be an ungrammatical sentence, it's not an ungrammatical one, it's simply an incompatibility between the semantics of the structure and the conceptual content of the lexical items. So in this line, consider what Aceo Matillán and Mateo argue. So they argue against Robert Coaf and Levine's claim that resolved verbs like break can only be interpreted as a result, as we briefly mentioned. That is, according to Robert Coaf, resolved verbs can only provide the result state of the event. And that is because they lexicalize a result state. So what Aceo Matillán and Mateo show is that resolved verbs can also be structurally interpreted as manner, thus providing an argument in favor of neoconstructionism. So we see this in examples like 10. That is, what we see in 10 is that whereas in 10A and 10B, that is the strong wind broke the glass or the glass broke. So here we see that the verb break provides the result state of the event, right? So in 10B, the glass broke, it is the case, it's certainly the case that the glass becomes broken. However, in the other examples, in 10C and 10D, the hammerhead broke off or the boy broke into the room. What they argue is that these examples, they do not entail that the subject referent becomes broken, right? So the boy broke into the room doesn't mean that the boy becomes broken or that the room actually goes can mean that there's no breaking. Or the hammerhead broke off. Here, what gets separated is the hammerhead. And break, what is doing here apparently is providing the manner, right? So 10C, the breaking is the means. What they say is that it is a means by which the hammerhead gets separated. And their logic behind this is that break here is structurally interpreted as manner because you're inserting the lexical item break in a manner in structure. And this is predicted to be possible because in principle, verbs are not constrained regarding the types of syntactic structures they can appear with. So, in short, free distribution approaches, they strongly reject the assumption that lexical items can have content that is grammatically relevant. As we saw, Borer, in her latest book, instantiates the most radical approach. They never have content. Content only comes from the syntactic structure. Acedo and colleagues and Mateo, they argue that lexical items can have content before they enter associated with the syntactic structure, but this content is not grammatically relevant, does not have an impact on the syntactic structures that lexical items can be associated with. On this view, we arrive at a conclusion in which there is a super strong division of labor between the lexical and the syntax, insofar only syntax determines the semantic and syntactic properties of the lexical items, and the lexicon is just taken to be this repository of idiosyncrasies and conceptual content. So having provided a brief overview of the consequences of both approaches, here I'm going to focus, as I said, on a case study, currently, which is work in progress, that it's going to show that neither lexicalism nor neoconstructionism successfully capture the syntactic distribution of verbs. We're going to focus on resolved verbs in particular. I'm gonna note, I'm gonna try to show that neoconstructionary approaches, they overgenerate, because there is a class of verbal roots that are highly constrained regarding the types of syntactic structures that they occur in. In contrast, I note that lexicalized approaches, in particular Rapoport-Hoff and Levine's, undergenerate because there is a class of verbs that appear to be more elastic regarding the types of syntactic structures that they can be associated with. So as a means, as a friendly reminder, so recall that Rapoport-Hoff and Levine argue that only manner verbs can provide the manner of the event, that is, John scrubbed his fingers raw. This is because manner verbs encode, lexicalize a manner of carrying out an action, and therefore occur in structures in which they provide the manner of the event. In contrast, insofar as resolve verbs encode a result state but not any manner of action, Rapoport-Hoff argued that this class of verbs do not appear in these structures, in which they are structurally interpreted as providing the manner of the event. And we saw this, that this was the case in non-selected object constructions. And a canonical example is John broke his fingers bloody, which cannot mean that John caused his fingers to become bloody by breaking things. So in this way, the lexicalized approach by Rapoport-Hoff and Levine highly constrains the types of syntactic structures, verbal classes occurring, depending on the semantic content. So here, I note, however, I note that a class of resolve verbs do appear in non-selected object constructions as initially illustrated by my Acedo and colleagues, contra what one would expect under the approach by Rapoport-Hoff and Levine. The data that we're going to consider now in 11 to 13 shows that some resolve verbs can provide the manner of the event, despite not encoding, not lexicalizing any manner of action. Okay, so let's consider some examples in 11 to 13. So for instance, consider 11a. So we have this example from the web. So Samson, who ripped him free of his bindings and pulled him to safety. So rip is taken to be a canonical resolve verb. That is, it in principle lexicalizes a result state, that something that becomes ripped. But here, note that rip is not providing any result state. What Samson is ripping is not this object, is not him. Him is what becomes free as a result of the ripping. So what Samson actually rips is his bindings, right? The 7 would be in 11b. So 6 times we broke her loose from the rocks. So here you're not breaking her, you're actually breaking the rocks, right? And the same with a few slices of her claws, she tore him free, right? So you're not tearing the object. So here the resolve verb is provided in the manner of action, that is, she tore him free. We believe this can be easily paraphrased as she caused him to become free by tearing other things. And the same is illustrated in examples like 12. So for the sake of time, I'm just going to consider 12a. So note this example. The power of the wind was used to move water to crush the oil out of linseed and rapeseed. So again, here what is being crushed is not the oil. What you actually crushed is the object of the prepositional phrase. That is, what's being crushed is these seeds. And the examples in 13 illustrate this construction in English, which we can call it in a descriptive way, a whole construction. So 13a, so scientists just melted a hole through 3,000 feet of ice. So here, this actually means that scientists created a hole by melting the ice, right? So here, the melting is the process by which the hole is created. A typical example of this construction is John kicked a hole, meaning that John kicked the door, for instance, and as a result, he created a hole. So in this construction, what you would expect under Rapoport-Hoff and Levine is that you only find manner verbs, because this construction, the verbs provide the manner of the event. The same for the examples in 13b and c. So I stuck my GoPro under some ice and then shattered a hole right above it. So here what's being shattered is not the hole, it's actually the ice. And the same for 13c, a discharge of those energies burned a hole in his forehead and killed him. So here you're not burning a hole, you are burning the forehead. So what these data show is that resolve verbs can apparently be associated with syntactic structures in which they are structurally interpreted as providing the manner of the event. So this provides evidence in favor of actually of a neoconstructionist approach, right? That is, that the interpretation of lexical items depends on the syntactic structures lexical items occur, right? That is, you have a verb like break. So in principle, break can either be structurally, can be interpreted as result of or manner, the interpretation of result of manner is going to depend on whether where you put this verb, in a manner or in a result structure. However, I also provide data that strongly suggests that the syntactic distribution of verbal classes in the syntactic structure is not completely unconstrained, as one would expect under a neoconstructionist approach. So in other words, the data I analyze show that it is not the case that any class of verbs can in principle appear in any syntactic context. And my point of departure is going to be Isambic's observation that not all classes of result verbs can provide the manner of the event. This is illustrated in below. So we have a contrast. Embig notes that there is a contrast between verbs like break, cut, or split, and verbs like open, darken, and blacken, right? So in 14, Embig notes that you can say in English, Mary broke the package open, Mary cut the package open, Mary split the package open. And Embig says, the analysis that Embig gives is that here break is providing the manner, the means of the event. That is, you cause the package to become open by breaking it. The same with cut and split. But Embig notes that other types of result verbs, that is open, darken, and blacken, they are also result verbs under Rapohov and Levine, right? So open lexicalizes a result state of becoming open. But he notes that in English, you cannot combine these verbs. He doesn't provide actual examples. So you cannot combine these verbs the same way that you can combine break verbs in 14. That is, you cannot combine an open, then a DP or an NP, an unphrase, and then you have a result phrase as in 14. So what he notes is that the roots of the adjectival result verbs, that is open, darken, blacken, do not appear to function as event modifiers. That is, they do not seem to be able to provide the manner of action of the event. That is, in contrast to neoconstructionist approaches, it doesn't seem that these verbs can be structurally interpreted as manner. So Embig provides examples in 15, and then, as I've said, it's actually really hard to come up with examples, but consider the examples in 16. So in English, in principle, you should be able to say something like, the kid opened the ball into the garden. And here the interpretation is that the kid caused the ball to go into the garden by opening a door. So this in principle is not, this example is really bad in English. Shouldn't be bad, according if you assume a neoconstructionist approach, because in principle, open should be able to be associated with any type of syntactic structure, result or manner. Or consider the example 16b. So the sky darkened, the city hard to see. This cannot mean that the sky caused the city to become hard to see by darkening. Or the dentist whitened his teeth clean. I don't think this can mean that the dentist caused the teeth to become clean by whitening. Or the same for 16D. So this example by Rapohov, we cooled the people out of the room with the air conditioner on too high. So again, this cannot have a manner interpretation of the verb cool. That is, this cannot mean that we caused the people to be out of the room by cooling something. So what's important to know that in 16 and also in Embig's examples, we have this type of verbs, open, darken, whiten, cool, dim, and thin. These are cases of the adjectival verbs. They are all cases of verbs that are derived from an adjective. That is, the base form is not the verb. The base form is an adjective. That is, you have thin, you have dark, and then you have the verb darken. Contrast the break verbs, they are not adjectival. They are morphologically simple in this way. So these examples, 16, showcases of the adjectival result verbs in constructions like the ones that we saw earlier in 11 and 13. That is, in these examples, the adjectival result verbs are intended to be inserted into instructions in which they are interpreted as providing the manner of the event. That is, the intended reading is that the result state that the result phrase denotes, that is, clean, into the garden, is brought about by the action the verbs denote, right? So these data show that the roots of the adjectival result verbs, such as open, darken, white, and thin, they do not appear to be able to function as event modifiers. And this is something that you don't expect under a neoconstructionist approach, because in principle, any type of lexical item should be able to be inserted into a manner or result structure, because lexical items are not constrained regarding the syntactic structures they can be associated with. Yes, so I just said it, but in other words, this class of resolved verbs, that is the adjectival resolved verbs, cannot be structurally interpreted as providing the manner of the event that brings about the resolved state. So this data strongly suggests that that syntactic distribution of lexical items, such as verb classes, is not completely unconstrained, since some classes of verbs do not allow certain association patterns with the syntactic structure. That is, the adjectival verbs cannot be put into manner structures. So this data show that in contrast to lexicalized approaches as the ones developed in Rapohov and Levine, which have been shown to undergenerate, neoconstructionist approaches overgenerate, since under these approaches, the data in 16 should be in principle possible. That is, neoconstructionist approaches predict that any class of verbs should be able to function as event modifiers and provide the manner of the action of the event. As I've said, this is because the semantic interpretation of lexical items depends on the syntactic structure lexical items occur in. So let's move on to try to account for this contrast. So the data that we discuss now with resolved verbs of the break type and the adjectival resolved verbs of the open type seem to provide evidence in favor of an approach in which the contributions of the lexicon and syntax need not be mutually exclusive, but actually they can complement each other. That is, the data that challenge both lexicalism and neoconstructionism provide evidence in favor of an approach that needs to recognize the role that both the lexicon and syntax play in deriving linguistic structure. That is what this contrast between break verbs and open verbs, they appear to tell us that while certain lexical items appear to be more elastic regarding the types of syntactic structures they occur in, contrary to what lexicalist approaches have been arguing and proposing, there are still clear incompatibilities between some classes of verbs and the types of syntactic structures they can be associated with. And this goes against or contrary to what one would expect under neoconstructionist approach. Here, I'm going to tentatively, preliminarily propose that the data that challenge lexicalist and neoconstruction approaches can be accounted for if one assumes an approach whereby the distinct semantics classes of verbs can have heavily bears on their distribution in the syntactic structure. And what do I mean by that? So the semantics of verbal roots determine semantic distribution, and therefore whether a certain class of resolved verbs can provide the manner of the event is largely determined by the semantics of such a class of verbs. So broadly speaking, I argue that we have two types, two classes of resolved verbs with respect to their association with their syntactic structure. On the one hand, we have resolved verbs that they are derived from roots of the break sort, that is, we have break verbs, break, cut. And these involve what Vivas and Cuscarbone have recently called resolved roots in capital letters, meaning roots which predicate a state of a unique participant, but they require that such a state must be the result of a change. That is, other verbs would be break, split, melt, freeze, crash, etc. So a possible semantics for this root class is the one as in 7. So we see that in 17, a resolved root is a predicate of a state. It predicates a state of an entity, but requires that there must be an event of change that leads to that event, to that state. So here I informally propose that resolved roots can be structurally interpreted as manner or result. That is, they can provide the result, state, or manner of action of the event, as we saw in the data that I provided. So for instance, we can have either interpretation. So 18, John broke the vase, here we would have a result interpretation. Whereas in 18b, we will have a manner interpretation of the same verb. So John broke him free. On the other hand, there are resolved verbs that they are derived from roots of the open sort, that is the adjectival verbs. And this is what Vivas and Cuscarbone have recently called property concept roots. That is, roots which predicate a pure, simple state of a unique participant without entailing that an event gives rise to the state. And we will have any the adjectival verb possible to exist in English. So open, cool, white, thin, dark, black. So if we see, if we compare it to 17, so in 19, a property concept root, that is the adjectival verb, it predicates a simple state of a participant, and it does not require any event leading to the state. So what I propose here is that property concept roots always provide the result state of the event, and therefore coercion into event modifiers is not possible. Contra one, what one expects under a neoconstructionist approach. So 20, in contrast to 18, so if you take out the adjectival verb, you only can only interpret it as a result. So John opened the door, fine, because here you're saying that there are, the door becomes open, but John opened the door, the ball into the garden, it's bad. So without getting into, again, into any formal formalization of the of this idea, the difference between result roots, and that is break, and property concept roots, that is open, regarding the association patterns with a syntactic structure, it boils down to the different semantics these two classes of roots have, these two classes of verbs. So that is, both classes of verbs are predicates of states, as we see this, in 17 and 19. So they are both predicates of states, but only result roots, they introduce an entailment of chain that gives rise to the state they denote, right? So consider this in 17. We have this eventivity, we have this event within the semantic denotation. That is, it requires that there is a change of a state event that brings about the state. So this means that in order for a broken state to hold of an entity, there has to be a previous event that leads to that state. In contrast, open, states like open can hold of entities without there being any event leading to the state of being open. So imagine you can build a door open, so that door has never been opened. So the idea with break would be that you cannot, or break or crush or shatter, you, something cannot be said to be broken, shattered, crushed without there have been a previous event leading up to that state. So if we assume that, and if we agree that this is this difference between these two verbs classes, verb classes are, is right, as Bibas and Gusgarven propose, what we expect, naturally expect, is that property concept roots like open are therefore prime candidates for providing the result of state of the event. Why is that? Well, because they simply denote pure states with no eventive properties. The fact that result roots can also function as event modifiers can be explained, or can is expected. You can expect that because this class of roots has some eventive properties as part of the semantic denotation. That is an entailment of chains. So what I think is going on here is that the eventive properties allow them to allow these result verbs like break to associate with the syntactic structure as event modifiers as well. That is, they are predicates of a state. So you expect that a verb like break provides the result state of the event, but somehow these eventive properties that they have as part of the semantic denotation allows this class of verbs to also be interpreted as manner. Although the frequency of these result verbs, that is, you mostly find these result verbs of the break type, generally speaking, you find them in result structures, they can also be part of these manner structures in English. Contrast, what I propose is that property concept roots, that is open, they are never associated with the syntactic structure as event modifiers because they denote simple, pure states. And the root, the verb, is completely stated with no eventive properties, and therefore you expect them to always provide the result of the event and never the manner of the event. So then, to conclude and to point out future directions. So this proposal of this, yeah, this, the proposal that I just proposed is critically different. Note that it's critically different from lexicalist approaches because I acknowledge that some meanings are indeed constructional. That is, syntax does indeed determine the semantic interpretation of some classes of lexical items. And this was the case when result verbs provide the manner of the event. So when you say John broke him free, here I agree and I assume that syntax is also is providing this manner interpretation because the verb, the result verb break, lexicalizes as part of their meaning a result state. However, you are able to associate this verb to take break and put it into a manner structure. And therefore, when you do that, syntax or the structure gives you this manner interpretation of the result verb. The present proposal, however, sides with the lexicalist approaches in sharing the assumption. So here I share the assumption that some lexical information can indeed be grammatically relevant because it can determine or constrain the syntactic structure certain lexical items can be associated with, as we saw, and we saw this with verbs like open. So further, the present proposal is also critically different from neo-constructionist approaches, since I assume that the syntactic distribution of lexical items is to be grammatically constrained. That is, not all verbs appear in the same syntactic structures. This respect syntax is not taken to be the sole engine to derive linguistic structure. Lexicon holds the lexicon and hold a more privileged status. So in a nutshell, what I have proposed is that the distinct semantics, so one has to be really careful about looking into the types of semantics similar verb classes have, as Vives and Gunskaboden have done, that is, under Rabohov and Levine, a verb like break, a verb like open, it's both a resolved verb. But if we look carefully into their behavior, we're going to see that they are, yes, they are resolvers, but there's a crucial difference between these verb classes. So what I've done is propose that the distinct semantics that classes of verbs have, they need to be compatible with the semantics of the syntactic structures. So the locus of ungrammaticality should be sought in terms of clashes between the semantics of the lexical items and the semantics of the syntactic structure. So the take home of this approach is that one should analyze the restrictions lexical items impose on the syntactic structure while acknowledging at the same time that syntactic structures can also impose restrictions on the types of semantic interpretations they generate. Thus, the ultimate goal I think one should aim for is to analyze in detail how such an interaction between the restriction imposed by lexical items and the syntactic structure exactly works in order to successfully derive a linguistic structure. So what I've argued in favor of here, I think this data, what shows is that we need some sort of a balance between syntax and between the lexicon. That is, syntax does a lot of the job, a lot of the work, but we should also acknowledge what the lexicon does. Gonna stop here. So thank you. Thank you very much for your attention.
Well, thank you very much for the talk, Joseph. And now the floor is yours. I mean, the whole audience. So if you'd like to ask a question, just turn your mic on, raise your hand, use the chat window.
I have a question.
Go ahead, please.
So widen the road into a 5-lane freeway. I guess it can be interpreted as turn the road into a freeway by widening it.
Which example?
So widen, I'm talking about your verb widen.
Yeah.
That's not supposed to be compatible with the resultative where widen is responsible for a manner. Is that what you were saying?
Yeah.
But then, so don't you think that widen a road into a freeway is a problem? Because what that means is that you turn a road into a freeway by widening it.
Well, yeah, one that is, there are also these examples like open a door ajar or...
Uh-huh. Yeah.
But
it wide, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but I don't think these involve the same structure than break him free, for example. So I think in this example, I think there's evidence to analyze them as the result phrase as not introducing a distinct result state than the verb does. So the idea would be that these examples are like freeze solid. When you say the lake froze solid, what Levine and Rabohov have proposed is that here, what the phrase the lake froze solid doesn't mean that the lake became solid by freezing, because solid is taken to be a modifier of the result state of the verb. So the syntactic structure for these examples would be different from the clear cases of non-selected objects, meaning that the verb in these examples is not a manner modifier. It still provides the result state with the result phrase open the door ajar, for instance, providing further specification about the state. That is, the result phrase would not be the complement of the syntactic structure. So the example with widen the road,
into a freeway.
If you don't have non-selected objects, so if you have actually cases of selected objects, it's really hard sometimes to see whether.
Yeah, I know. I was trying to find a non-selected pizza, but I can't find one.
Yeah, I think I haven't been able to find any, and the ones that I found you always have a selected object, and the result phrase can be taken to be a modifier of the result state of the verb, rather than introducing a distinct result state, which would be the manner interpretation of the verb. Yeah.
With widen, though, you I don't know, is that the freeway can, like, the result state is that the road is now a freeway, right? It's a, and I, would you want to say that that's part of the meaning of the verb?
At this point, at this moment, I would have to say that, yes.
Yeah.
But I would have to. Well,
yeah. I had another idea. Whenever I see the words wide and thin and dark, I also think of these are the open ended scale.
Yeah. So
examples of Wechsler, and then, but with straighten and empty, so the predicates associated with the maximal point scales, I don't think, I don't know if you've ever thought about those predicates, like straighten the rope or empty the fridge.
No,
I don't know if they are compatible with any resultatives, probably not.
I agree that within this class, there are a lot of differences according to the scalar, the scale structure of this activity. I agree. And I think that if we were to look into the details about the differences between a scalar structure, maybe we could arrive at a conclusion or arrive at a view in which some of them are more prone to to taking resolved phrases on the other.
Yeah. And just one more thing, and then I'll leave. So break into the room. I don't think that's a counterexample because there's no breaking involved in that, right? It just means, as far as I understand, I checked it in a dictionary, that you're using force to get into, but you're not actually breaking anything.
I think there's not an entailment of breaking. The breaking can be, maybe is strongly inferred, but I don't think there's a lexical entailment.
Yeah, I just wanted to, that was an example from Asadu Matayam perhaps, but
yeah, so,
and some of the examples do involve breaking, that's, I guess, but that one, that particular one, it's,
Yeah, that one doesn't, and you could always say that you have to break verbs in English, and that's that's not that weird.
That's what I thought. Yeah,
you can say that because you break also behaves different. Like you can also break the connection in which there's no physical breaking. There's simply something stopping working. So maybe you could say that we have two the same surface forms for two different. Different verbs with different lexical entailments.
Yeah. Okay. Thanks a lot.
Thank you, Eva.
While we are thinking, can I just ask you about your view on the grammaticality of 20b, for example? So. So you don't want to put grammatical features into the lexicon, like you put there some semantics, right? Then if I get this well, 20b is not strictly speaking ungrammatical, it's semantically ill-formed.
I don't know whether you want to say whether it's actually ungrammatical, like syntactically speaking, or not. I mean, syntactically speaking, is not ungrammatical, but I take it to be ungrammatical in the sense that this example has some. The syntactic structure that people have given for this type of examples involves the verb being a modifier to the verb, to the verb projection or the verb structure. So I mean that that's ungrammatical because with these type of verbs, you cannot have, so the verb cannot be a modifier of these other projection in the syntax. So it's not taken to be ungrammatical because the structure is bad or whatever. So it's because since open cannot be a manner modifier, then the syntactic structure that people have usually assigned to this type of examples involves the verb being a modifier of the verbal domain. That is, open must, this type of verbs is always a complement of the syntactic structure, is never a modifier. So that's why I would say it's ungrammatical in this sense, this specific theory internal sense.
So is this a syntactic problem or you think that the syntactic structure is generated and then some issue arises?
Yeah, you could say that. Yeah, I think that you can generate the syntactic. You generate the syntactic structure. However, the lexical item in this case, open, has some semantic content that does not allow it to have this specific position in the syntactic structure. So yes, that's how I would which I would see it. Like there's some sort of a clash between the type of meaning that the verb has and the type of meaning that the syntactic structure, the manner structure has, and you're trying to combine two things that they do not go well with each other.
And like on the empirical side, if I can just add something to this, is the root open something like a universal, or do you expect other types of lexicalizations for opening events which are not like the English root open? Or...
Well, I don't know how different open can be lexicalized. You mean across languages?
Yeah, so is this something like a universal that there's a verb for opening probably and it behaves like the English verb?
Yeah,
this kind of lexical entry.
What I would say is that maybe open can be lexicalized differently across languages, but what's going to be important is whether a verb has the semantic denotation in 19 across languages. So what you predict under this approach is that if a verb has these semantics in 19, then you don't expect that type of verb to appear in a structure in which you are trying to force that verb to behave as a manner verb. So it's not about maybe not it's not about like it's about what the verb open can lexicalize across languages. But I think Beavers and Guskovar and colleagues have shown that across languages these type of verbs they keep their lexical entailments across languages. That is, you have the same type of a state of open in English and other languages is lexicalized the same way across languages. That is, you have a base form, an adjective open that denotes this simple state, and then you have the adjectival verb that can denote this becoming to open across languages.
Okay, thank you. Well, then maybe just one another question. So you talked about this one particular class where we have to assume that there is some semantic content stored in the lexicon. Are there any other verb classes that you're working on that seem to have this property, that they need to be constrained lexically?
Yeah, I think. So I think the. What Beavers call manner of killing verbs like electrocute, drown, crucify, all these verbs also have some rich lexical entailments, and they would behave like more, they would be even more specified, that they would not simply predicate a state and require that there be a change that leads to that state, but they also impose restrictions on how you can cause that state. So these type of verbs would even be more semantically rich in this case. So what you would expect that they should have more syntactic distribution compatibilities between syntactic structures because they impose more restrictions on how the state they denote cause. That is, electrocute somebody according to Beavers and Guskovar, that means that the cause somebody to become to die or to be shocked by electrocuting. So there's a specific type of event, and the verb provides information about all types of all the components of the event. So what I would expect it is that these can also impose restrictions on the syntactic structures they can be associated with because they are really semantically rich. Yeah.
And as you already mentioned in the beginning, like you gave a talk, another talk here yesterday, which also discussed these verb classes. So if anybody is interested in that talk, we can, I think, forward your handout from yesterday. So just please send us a message or send Giuseppe an email directly. So let me ask once again if there are any questions or comments. Well, then thank you very much, everybody, for attending this talk today. And thank you very much, Joseph, for doing this talk for us. It's
Thanks.